Hello there, and welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. My name is Caleb, and today I'm joined by Drs. Rod Rosenblatt, Scott Keith, and Adam Francisco. Today's episode is going to be on creeds, Christian creeds, and the reason we're going to do that today is we have, for the last 2 years now, done topics that correspond to our fall Here We Still Stand conference in a lead-up to that. The theme of this conference this year is I Believe In and is related to the Apostles' Creed. And so I thought it would be good for us to sort of start doing an episode on that. We'll also talk about some of the other resources 1517 has on this, because this isn't the first time we've approached creeds. And overall, I think it should be, I'm hoping to have a good episode. I have a couple questions in mind that I think I've heard people express in the past, and I'm excited to address them on the show. Before we jump into the full episode, I just wanted to give people an update of some events that are coming out. Obviously, the Here We Still Stand conference is coming around. It's in October. We have some straggling tickets remaining for that. So if you thought you missed out, there are still a couple for you to grab. When this episode comes out, we will be 1 week away from being at the Lutheran Study Days conference in Bergen, Norway. I'm guessing a week out would give people not so much opportunity to go there. But hey, if you live in Europe, maybe you want to, I don't know if they do the equivalent of Southwest's want to get away in continental Europe, but
they do actually. A lot of the
Ryanair and
a lot of the air carriers offer great rates for inside of Europe.
Yeah. So you still may be able to go to that if you're interested. It's kind of a wonderful three-day thing. I'll put the link to both Here We Still Stand and the conference in Norway, Lutheran Study Days in Norway, in the show notes. By going to those links, you can see all of the dates, all the logistics, close hotels, hotel booking. If you do have an opportunity to go to these conferences at the last minute, maybe you will be able to. And then Donovan Riley's book, Crucifying Religion, just came out. We did talk about that at the beginning of the show a couple weeks ago for pre-order. If you didn't pre-order it, it is now available on Amazon and the 1517 store. I looked this morning, it was trending at number like 12 in Lutheranism and Amazon.
Oh, really?
So that's pretty cool.
It was one for a while.
Yeah, that's good. For a couple days.
The other day, I think we were in danger of running out of copies already.
It sold out at some point.
It did sell out for a couple days. Yeah. And I think today when I went on there, they said they had them back in stock. So yeah, we were able to print some and get them back to Amazon fulfillment centers. So that's great. So yeah, please do go check that out. Again, links in the show notes below. All right, guys. So creeds, I guess, I mean, we should probably start at the beginning and defining what a creed is, and then start with what the common ones are and why we have them, and go for it. Anybody want to go for it?
It's interesting that in the opening chapters of our Book of Concord, we affirm the ecumenical creeds. Why did we do that? Because the charge was that we were innovating or doing something new. And it was to set that at rest by the time somebody read almost the introduction, saying, all of the classical heresies we disaffirm, the classical faith as expressed in the three ecumenical creeds we affirm, and so forth and so forth. We are not some kind of innovators of a new religion or whatever you charge us with. We're not. This is historic Christianity.
And at a basic level, creeds are a confession of faith. They're
they're
brief statements of faith. They tend to be short for that reason. They can be longer. And that definition can actually sort of encompass other things, like, say, confessions, like Lutheran confessions, or the Book of Concord in general, or Augsburg Confession, or whatever. So they can.
Yeah, if you're trying to answer the question, who's a Lutheran, it's going to come to one who affirms the confessions.
Mm-hmm. And so the shorter sort of universally recognized confessions are just known as the creeds. Usually that's referring to the Apostles' Creed and the Nicene Creed and sometimes the Athanasian Creed,
Yeah.
I guess would be the common.
Another thing it might be worthwhile our listeners knowing If you ever use the word heresy rather than confused, if you use the word heresy, I was taught at seminary, it had to do with rejecting something in the three ecumenical creeds, not just somebody you disagreed with.
Right, and oftentimes, for example, the Nicene Creed are written to combat a particular heresy.
That's
like
right.
Arianism.
Arians. Yeah. By the way, we had and have had for a while a thing done by Rich Gilbert years ago, which is the Nicene Creed in print, and underneath every phrase, the verses. It was a nice pamphlet, a trifold, and for the anti-creedal people, you know, you explain to them the liturgy is all Bible verses, just used in a particular order, but it's all Bible verses, and something like the Nicene Creed, there's a reason for every phrase in it, and Rich started, or completed, putting verses under every phrase. That was for evangelicals. And I was hoping they would be in the narthex of every Lutheran parish. Here, take one of these.
Last year when we published the Soul of Christianity podcast, it's a seasonal podcast that comes out every year, the theme was the Apostles' Creed. And so for each episode is a list of show notes that includes the supporting verses for those particular confessions.
Great.
Within it too. So that's I think that's a good trend to follow.
Yep.
So one of the common critiques of creeds that you would see, because I guess for, you know, Lutherans may be familiar with utilizing them in worship, in our services, certainly they're in our hymnal, I believe. I don't know. I'm trying to think of everybody else who would do it. The Catholic Church utilizes the creeds within worship. Episcopals,
yes.
Church utilizes creeds within worship. But you're sort of your non-denominational churches, Southern Baptist churches, things like that may...
They're in principle opposed.
Yes. And so you hear sort of this critique, why do I need the creeds when I have
the Bible.
Scripture?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
So what do we say when somebody goes, well, sure, there's creeds there, but why not just go back one step further?
I'm going to be what I hope is fair and say I haven't heard that critique in a while from an evangelical. Now, I'd say in the 90s, late 80s and the 90s, you heard that kind of thing all the time when sort of the Vineyard movement was in full swing and Calvary Chapel was in full swing and all this. I heard that kind of thing all the time. And what we used to say to it is, well, a creed is essentially a confession of faith. Everybody confesses something, even if they say, I just confess the Bible, right? Everybody confesses somebody's view of the Bible, even if that's their own. Everybody confesses something. In fact, the Bible itself contains what could be argued are some confessions, right?
Yep.
And the danger when you're not able to identify what your confession is, i.e., I confess the Apostles' Creed, I confess the Augsburg Confession, is that you don't know exactly whose confession you're holding to, right? And 9 times out of 10, it used to be in the past, at least, at these non-denominational churches where, you know, you hear people say this, is that they really did have a quite intricate confession. It was just a confession of their individual pastor. Mm. Who was their main teacher at their church, who would himself say, well, I'm just teaching you the Bible.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is that unless somebody's just getting up there and reading the text and then saying, have a nice weekend, go home.
Right.
They're not just teaching you the Bible.
Yeah.
They're teaching you the Bible plus what they think about what was written down, you know, at least 2,000 years-ish ago, right? They're giving you, as we like to call it, a kind of interpretation of what is presented, the teachings that are presented in the text. Once they've done that, they've expressed to you their confession of faith.
Yep.
It's just a matter of, are they being honest about what their confession of faith is, or are they saying they don't have one? And now, again, to try to be a bit fair on this, I haven't heard somebody say this in a while.
Okay.
I for whatever reason, I think that Reformational theology has had enough of an impact on the general evangelical world over the last 20 years that even though they may not use, and I could be wrong on this, the Augsburg, or not the, the, like the Apostles' Creed in their Sunday service, they don't necessarily object to the idea of the Apostles' Creed or something. Now, we'll say 20 years ago, I'd say there's a significant level of objection to that kind of thing. I don't sense that as much anymore.
Okay, that's interesting.
I don't know if that's true. I haven't personally heard the phrase that we used to hear all the time, I just confessed the Bible.
Okay.
In a while.
Okay. That's interesting.
I don't know, maybe you guys have.
The most Americans wouldn't understand, I don't think, that the claim of almost all of them is to be an accurate summation of the Bible's major teachings. A creed is a summation of verses, and I think most Americans right there would be lost.
Yeah, and I think most people, if they are kind of wholly unfamiliar with creeds, and I'm going to throw confessions in this conversation, mm-hmm. Caleb, and confessions, they believe that if you hold to, say, like Martin Luther's Small Catechism, mm-hmm. that you're holding to the expressed teachings of a particular man,
yeah.
rather than what the man wrote down concerning the scriptures.
Yeah.
You know, and that may be a bit of a nuance difference for some people, but it's actually not that nuanced. I mean, most of what Luther is doing, say even in the Small Catechism, is trying to bring scriptural teaching mm-hmm. to the forefront.
Mm-hmm. And sum it up,
you know. And when people say, too, it's kind of interesting, if you say, hey, I just confessed the Bible, it'd be kind of funny to say, like, which parts?
Yeah. Sure.
It's a big,
or Mike.
It's a big, it's a big yeah. collection of books. I was going to say it's a big yeah. book, but it's not even a book. It's a big collection of books.
Yeah. Yeah, Dr. Horton would say, but the Bible has so many pages in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's funny if you were to ask them, oh, what part do you confess to? They'd probably start giving you doctrines.
Yes.
Is the funny thing. And once they start giving you doctrines,
they're doing what the creeds do.
They're yep. doing what the creeds do.
Yeah. I was kind of thinking that maybe, I mean, I think that's it. But also, Christianity in the last, 100 years, maybe a little longer, is no longer, in the general sense of the term, about, you know, confessing Christ and so on, but it's more about a way of life, like the way yep. all other religions
yeah, yeah.
are.
And absolutely.
So doctrine and trying to get to the essence of the, yeah. its teachings, is that's kind of an afterthought now.
Yeah, yeah. I agree
yep,
with you.
Yep, I agree.
Big American Christianity, sure, it has doctrine, but it doesn't emphasize doctrine as much as those sort of classic Christian traditions.
Yeah, and so, if you're in any place where the view of Christianity is headed toward better behavior, it's to improve us. We're already in a sticky wicket. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm going to object to that if I'm in the back of the room right off the bat. It isn't yeah. what Christianity's for. Christianity's for dying.
Yeah.
And, bringing it to
which
sort of...
Which is a confession.
Which is a confession, yeah. yeah. Bringing this to sort of Reformation principles, I heard a critique from a Roman Catholic. Well, I engaged... had a conversation with a Roman Catholic who basically said, you know, ad fontes, going back to the sources, is sort of the big mistake that Lutherans make, right? But he had sort of what we would call a radical reformer, you know, I picture of this, really just erasing everything that came before the biblical text. But what the Lutheran humanists did with this was go back to the text, but also then go back to the creeds and go back to the fathers and go and not throw out anything that wasn't in total disagreement. So you don't lose creeds as
right.
You go. It wasn't like just trash everything, start over.
No, no. Luther was not a revolutionary in that sense at all.
And in fact, it adds revalue to tradition because you have different people, different situations, people who have struggled with difficult verses, maybe heresies, things like that, that you're not encountering new for the first time, people who can help you navigate that, and that has added value rather than diminished value by having access to the biblical text also.
Think of something that was said in the Book of Concord, that if you don't separate law and gospel, or if you don't understand those two categories, you'll never understand anything in the Bible. It'll be just two ways of salvation that are equal, you know, one by law and somehow the other by grace. But that was one thing our writers of the Book of Concord said. This is the distinction you've got to get first. Not every verse is law, and not every verse is gospel. You've got to at least start to learn that distinction. So we said that in our own...
In other words, not every verse is both.
Right.
Yeah, most often it's one or t'other.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, what's funny is, to get to this, you know, I just teach the Bible thing. Technically, Jesus just taught the Bible of his time.
Yep.
But he sure said a lot more about it than others had.
Yeah.
And a lot clearer things about it because, you know, he's the original author of it and everything. Mm-hmm. So as he explains it, right, he's, to the outside world who doesn't understand what he's saying, it seems like he's adding his own confession to the text. But really
and
what he's doing...
And gets accused of that.
And yep. what he's doing is clarifying what had been known
think of the Sabbath, since the beginning. The Sabbath question.
Yeah.
And he comes right to the edge of saying... Let me tell you what I meant when I wrote that.
Yeah.
Right to the edge of it.
Yeah. Well, anytime he says, don't you know it is written?
Yeah.
He's saying exactly that.
Yep.
And what does he say in that case? You know, don't you know that the Sabbath was not made, or the man was not made for the Sabbath, but the Sabbath made for man?
Yep.
Right? That's mind-blowing at the time. I'm sure from the reaction of the crowd, even as it's recorded.
Yep.
That's mind-blowing. It's a confession.
Yep.
Of sorts, you know. Yep. You're saying, "Listen, in our context, you're misunderstanding the third commandment. You're misunderstanding what it means to keep the Sabbath holy. Mm-hmm. You think that you're keeping the Sabbath holy for the sake of the Sabbath, but really, the Sabbath was meant to be kept holy for your sake."
Yep.
You know, that's a confession of faith that clarifies something that had been said in the text for thousands of years.
Yep.
Prior to Jesus' incarnation, and that he's now saying in a way that is clear,
yeah,
and understandable in a, to the degree that those who came before him didn't really get that all that much.
Yeah, what was the thing he said about you search the scriptures, thinking that in them you have life? Yeah. They speak of me.
They speak of me.
Moses wrote of me.
I know, that's amazing stuff, man.
I think one of the, unless you had something.
No, no.
I think one of the reasons that maybe this can be unfamiliar to people, is we don't use the word creed very often in our modern vocabulary outside of religious and then sometimes some historical political situations. But for everyday life, it's sort of an unknown term. And so you can, I think it's sort of abstract. So one of the things...
There is a movie. Isn't there a movie called Creed?
Creed. Yeah, yeah.
It's a boxing movie or something like
that. That's a great Rocky movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it has nothing to do with Creed.
It's just laughing.
But I will say, just a bit of a tangent, if you want like a wonderful father story, Creed and Creed 2.
Really?
Okay. Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. It's one of, especially Creed 2 is one of the most profound father stories that I've seen in a long time.
I'll go watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to put in a plug for Justin Holcomb's little book, too, for laity. Mm-hmm. Justin Holcomb, Know the Creeds and Councils. Know the Creeds and Councils. And it's short and it's good.
Yeah, it's short. It's basically an outline of what problems were arising that caused the need for sort of these formalized creeds, and then the history behind how they were formed, and includes sort of the verses that back them up as well. It's a great little book.
I've often wondered, and I don't know where I'd find it, what young Athanasius argued against Arius. What verses did he... Because we were going to lose Christianity to Arianism. And I do you know of any book where it sums up what he argued or what verses?
I hope you're asking Adam, because that's a very Adam question.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think.
I mean, he primarily argues for attributes of the divinity of God and why it's...
Okay.
You know...
Divinity of Christ.
Maybe not.
No, Arius.
Oh, Arius. I'm not sure.
Yeah, so, the attributes and why it's sort of... I think the verses, if I remember correctly, I just had to do this for a class where I was reading. So,
I mean, he was exiled from the empire five times.
He does use verses.
Then he converts all the pagan tribes. to Arianism. So Arianism comes back a couple centuries later.
If I remember correctly, Rod, all the verses he uses are all sort of declarations about God, like the Lord your God is one, or that are simply like shorter verses.
Like Unitarian
about,
kind of.
Correct, yeah. So, yeah, shorter verses about the nature of God. And
And that if you do make this move, it's sort of polytheism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then brings up essentially philosophical contradictions by saying...
Okay. It's funny to me how quickly that stuff makes it back into Christian teaching.
Well, Dorothy Sayers...
Isn't it funny?
Sayers said, if you don't teach these to your people, they'll come back with another name.
I'm saying it's always shocking to me how quickly philosophical axioms as determinative theology come back into Christian teaching. I mean, it never wasn't there. I mean, this is the thing, because Paul, in many places, like, you can sense sort of Paul arguing against this. As Colossians 2.
Yeah, Colossians 2:9. I wondered whether Athanasius used that.
Yeah.
For in him all the fullness of deity was pleased to dwell bodily.
But isn't it Colossians 2 already when Paul's warning about being deceived by clever philosophies?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What is it, the first element, the elemental
principles
of the world or like that? I always wondered what that meant. Is it just first philosophy, first principles of
natural,
the secular philosophy?
Natural theology type stuff?
Yeah, and then Galatians 3 echoes that too.
I mean, with issues like this, it makes me think Tertullian, you know, his statement, his answer to the question, what does Jerusalem have to do with Athens?
Right.
He basically says nothing.
Nothing.
There's a lot of wisdom there in many ways.
Yeah, yeah. He was very adamant on that, that anything else was philosophical, forget it.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the first thing Christ does when he starts, you know, his earthly ministry is start identifying all of the extra add-ons.
Mm. Yes.
That have been, I mean, that's...
The rabbinic tradition.
Yeah. Yep.
Chides
them for it.
Well, you can kind of see him doing two things. You can kind of see him, like, identifying all the misinterpretations of the Old Testament, right? Mm. Right off the bat. And then you can see him, too, sort of deconstructing all of the possible philosophical add-ons to what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you crush a lot of philosophical axioms if you teach that you are God incarnate. You know, you crush them if you teach that, you know, your body is going to be present in the elements of bread and wine during the Lord's Supper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you in a lot of ways crushed him just by claiming that you'll be resurrected.
Yeah, and then do it.
And then do it. And it's just... And how quickly it comes back in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It always comes back
in. It always comes back in.
Every step of the way of the church, it always comes back in.
Your theology is then measured against an axiom that we think we got a total handle on.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We got this locked down. So, you know.
Well, it's partly why doing theology is exhausting. I was telling him the other day that, you know, one of the things that's annoying about caring about theology and being educated in it is everybody, even people who don't believe they have an opinion on theology, every single person you run into has a theological opinion. Even if you know they're an atheist, that's a theological opinion. If they're agnostic,
Lutherans and the Reformed have both said that every person is his own theologian until it gets cleaned up.
And so it's sort of, you know, having the creeds are more of a gift than an order of something for you to do, which is, I think, one of the things that sort of would cause people to have an initial pushback is to see it as one of those things that's an add-on, to see it as a new rule of things I have to do, yet another thing I have to do.
Yep.
You know, the way I've explained it in the past is that, you know, creed for us in modern times is related to the idea of credit. And they share the same root word, but... You're credited with something. You're credited with the gift of the knowledge of the faith.
That's true.
And you're also directed to give credit where credit is due for what where that faith comes from and where your salvation comes from.
Yep.
So if I'm, you know, because we have two forms of credit. We have basically financial credit. I can get a loan for my house or a car or a credit card or something like that, and that's something received. And, you know, sometimes you have to pay that back. Sometimes you don't. And then there's giving people credit. Like if, you know, my wife does the dishes and somebody comes into my house and says, wow, your kitchen's so clean. that I should direct that credit to sure. where it has been done. And that's what the creeds essentially help us do. They help us direct that credit for our salvation to Christ and to God alone. Mm-hmm. And they also credit us with this gift of the knowledge of the faith. And this is one of those things we talked about on the Q&A episode that recently went up, is that there's no, even though we have sort of iPhones and everything with us all the time, having little pieces of truth and comfort that you can keep to heart is an incredible gift.
Yeah.
That's something that's immediately there for you, that there's no effort to go, what is that again?
Right.
Am I really saved? Well, those words echoing in the back of your head when you start questioning
right.
How this works
right.
is a great comfort. It's not just the next thing I must do in church.
Yeah, yeah. I know if I probably...
Luther's line, this is most certainly true.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. Well, I know I've talked about this before, I'm sure, maybe more than once. When Luther, in the Reformation, when they're waiting for the Muslim Empire to extend further into Central Europe, Luther wrote a little work where he gave advice to those who were in that territory, basically the border territory between the Ottoman Empire and Germany. And he said, he gave a fairly long sermon, all sorts of advice. He says, the first thing to do is learn the creed now. Huh. So if you're taken captive by the Turks.
During times of persecution.
Yeah, if you're...
What will you remember?
If you're a prisoner of war, you're sold in the Ottoman slave markets.
Yep.
You're not going to have any pastor or evangelical books available to you.
Yep.
So get the faith in your head now.
Yep.
You know, in addition to that, the Our Father, the Lord's
Lord,
Prayer,
the Lord's
and the
Supper,
Ten Commandments.
Ten Commandments. Yeah.
Sure.
So the creeds are not just, I mean, they...
It's also part of why he gives his morning and evening prayers, too, so that you...
Yeah, just something that, so you don't, in case you don't have a book.
Well, yes. And, you know, I would say this seems to apply now in our era to the excess of information, to the exact opposite, that because there is so much...
Distractions.
So much distraction, so much information, so much counter.
Americans can't imagine a time when they wouldn't have access to a Bible, let alone when they wouldn't have access to the internet.
And a lot of this flood brings doubt into what information is true, if there is any that is true. And it's sort of refreshing to go back to something before this mass flood of, you know, opinion as fact into the general marketplace.
Yeah.
And
at the same time, I think Luther would have urged to memorize some of the scriptures too.
Yes.
Themselves.
Yes.
And that's, I mean, we're talking to, when people hear that, and if they draw a conclusion from that Luther was sort of anti-memorizing the scriptures and just memorizing the history or the tradition of the church, that's the wrong conclusion. We're talking about a man who had the majority of the Old Testament, you know, contributed to memory, let alone the majority of the New Testament.
Amazing.
These men would write and they would quote strictly from memory.
Yep, and be accurate.
As they went and be accurate.
Yep. Amazing.
It's time. I mean, you can see that in length, and I know it's true in Luther too, that these guys just their knowledge of the scriptures just was incomprehensible for us.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they understood that the common layman, so you'd say in Ari, it's like the common master electrician who's working 70 hours a week, wiring homes and buildings, maybe doesn't have time to commit most of the New Testament to memory.
Right.
But could commit a summary of the New Testament faith to memory in one of the creeds.
Yeah, and even some of the verses that are key.
Yeah,
like we just used Colossians 2:9. I've put out a set of those that people through 15-17 can get, and I'm going to expand it with the help of others. Then if they want to have that little machine that is for memorizing scripture, get it and load it. Get it and load it.
As a note too, I would say it's okay to be in a position where you're questioning the creeds and looking for answers to that. If you read it, if there's something that rubs you the wrong way, that doesn't make you a heretic. You might not confess differently, that makes you somebody who's inquisitive, asking questions, and they're probably the right questions.
And that's got to be passed on to children. Christianity loves people doubting.
Yeah, and it's there's no need to there's no need for us to tell people not to do that, because you know I'm confident that the answers are abundantly clear within the Scripture and have been passed down through the creeds and beyond that.
Many people don't know that even in the day of Saint Augustine, there were standard objections to Christian truth. And he was dealing with them in his day, and thank God got them into his books, where they were answers to the most common questions from the text of Scripture.
So I guess a good question is, where can people find the creeds, you know, if this is sort of their first major time interacting with the idea here, or they've, you know, saw them when they were in school or as a kid, but don't remember where to go.
Any liturgical church will have them in their hymnal. Episcopal, Lutheran, I think even Reformed would have the ecumenical creeds available in their hymnal.
Which again gets back to sort of that last episode at the end of the Q&A where you talked about sort of having a hymnal around isn't such a bad thing. Yeah. It's not just for getting from point A to point B on Sunday.
Right.
I mean, they'll at least have the Apostles and Nicene Creed in the actual divine service.
And I can see why in our synod, our church, they would put out editions of Luther's Catechism and expand with the supporting verses. Mm-hmm. And it's a good collection.
Well, I mean, I know we do this all the time, but for the purposes of learning the Apostles' Creed and then learning another confession, one could easily pick up the Small Catechism, which would have the Apostles' Creed and Luther's explanation.
Yep.
His explanation is basically, how would I teach this to somebody? Which I kind of love, you know. Mm-hmm. Here's the creed. How would I teach why this is important to somebody?
Right.
And so he explains it in that way. And then in there, you're going to get to the Ten Commandments. You could memorize the Ten Commandments from them. And Luther's sort of, how would I teach the Ten Commandments to somebody? Mm-hmm. The Lord's Prayer. Mm-hmm. All of these things that have to the church for 2,000 years been the hallmark of what we teach and what we believe and what we confess.
Mm-hmm. We
in one little tiny book.
Yeah. Shane used to ask, when there'd be a Christian conference, he would ask questions like this. And one of the questions he asked, I remember only one guy was able to answer. And I said to Shane, how did he know it? Shane said, when he was a child, he was in catechism.
Yeah, Rod's referring to on White Horse Inn, they used to do, they were hilarious episodes if anybody used to listen to them and remember, where the guys at White Horse Inn would send their producer, Shane, into like the evangelical radio conference or something like that.
With a microphone.
Yeah. And he would just ask like basic questions like, who is Jesus? And tell me what you know about God the Father and things like that. And they'd have these episodes where they play the answer. You couldn't get away with it anymore because that type of thing is way too polemical for our day and age. Like, you'd be accused of all sorts.
Oh, man, I was going to say, wow, this sounds like a good idea.
Just all sorts of meanness and whatever. But they were hilarious White Horse Inn episodes because you'd hear these people just like give the most idiotic answers on the planet. And then hear Mike and Kim and Rod sort of respond to the... But by the end, everybody's... The thing about those episodes, it had to be hard for you guys, because by the end, everyone's just sad. You know, you're just like, this is just sad. This is just...
It's probably like what Luther encountered in the 1520s when they visited all the churches and saw how appalling.
Yeah.
Even 10 years after the Reformation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you can only laugh at horrible theological answers for so long because you realize at the end of that is somebody that's really suffering from bad theology.
Yeah.
And when we mean suffering, too, we mean like, you know, actually suffering.
Yeah.
Like conscious is not cleansed. They have not heard that they are forgiven. They do not, you know, have the words to say, I trust in Christ alone for my salvation.
Yeah,
I do wonder, just for the sake of it being an interesting study, to see if the answers are still as bad.
Probably.
I think it would be.
It would be interesting.
You know, I don't know. I've been to quite a few evangelical churches lately that are very reformational.
Good.
And so I...
good.
It's hard to tell if that's a sample of everything or just who invites
just who invites me. Yeah, I get that. This it could be total confirmation bias.
It could be Piper's work.
Yeah. It could be Piper. There's quite a few people that sort of made a lot of inroads. Mike Horton made a lot of inroads into those worlds.
A big one.
Yeah, Rod's friend. I'm forgetting his name, Rod. Ligonier.
Sproul.
Yeah, R.C. Sproul made a lot of inroads. I mean, we're talking 20 years ago, though. Harrison was doing 25 years ago. To me, it'd be interesting to see, and this is like how I started this by saying, I want to be fair and say I haven't heard this question. I haven't heard somebody say this in a long time.
Mm-hmm. I do want to note, you know, some people did comment a while ago that you seem critical of Calvinism, and that was a lot of credit due to a group of Calvinists for helping people.
Well, I am critical of Calvinism. Sure. Mike Horton would appreciate that.
Sure. Yeah. Sure you would. Oh,
yeah. It's great.
So would have RC, I think.
Yes, I think he would.
Yeah, he would. I miss him terribly. But I was invited to White Horse Inn because Mike didn't want it to be another purely Reformed operation.
Yeah.
He said, I want Missouri Lutheran at the table, and that means you.
Yeah. I think we need to invite Mike Horton to be on Thinking Fellows because we don't need this to be another purely Lutheran operation.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'm down. I'd be happy to.
Well, we have a lot of those strongly Reformed people who are listening to the to what we're doing here. There are a lot of them.
Yeah, I agree. So, I agree.
Well, guys, we've made time. Are there any extra additions we need to do? The only thing I was going to mention is look out for October. Where 1517 is going to be publishing a book on creeds. So.
I don't know when this is going up, but I just recently heard that we have exactly like a dozen or so tickets left to Here We Still Stand if people still want to register.
I did mention that at the beginning of the show, but you were listening at looking at your computer.
Oh, that's, wow, that was vicious.
Savage.
Savage, that's what I was looking for.
Hey, thank you for listening to this episode. You know, I do want to let people know that we appreciate your subscriptions and that, you know, maybe you're listening to this on the internet for the first time and this first maybe somebody's showing you a podcast for the first time. And I know technology can be confusing. So I've been told that it might be helpful to explain to people how to subscribe to a podcast rather than just listen one time on the internet. So I'm going to try to give that a shot here. At the end of this episode,
you're going
to
explain podcast mechanics.
Okay. I know, just one. Mm-hmm. This is I think I have three steps. Okay, and this may not work for everybody, but I think this will work. So across the board. So here it goes. Take your smartphone or tablet. Open it up, unlock it. Okay. Search for, you can usually type it in, or just swipe through your apps, a podcasting app. Every smartphone and tablet sold in the U.S. has a default podcasting app that you can find.
Adam's following along. Yeah. Hold on a second. I'm going to do the same thing.
Once you find it.
My phone hasn't read my face yet. Okay, right there. Okay.
Open it up.
Okay.
And then in the bottom right-hand corner or on the bottom somewhere is a little magnifying glass that says search.
Yeah,
and you can type in Thinking Fellows or 1517 podcasts, and it'll take you to our content. And usually has suggested shows below it, which includes most of the shows on the network get featured underneath our podcast.
Yep, we come up number one under Thinking Fellows. What's the other one? 1517 podcasts?
1517 podcasts.
Oh, that's a high hit on the search even. Oh, there they all are. 40 minutes in the Old Testament, 30 minutes in the New Testament. Thinking Fellows, Christian History Almanac, Soul of Christianity, Christianity on Trial, that's Dr. Montgomery's show, Banned Books, You Are Forgiven, Ringside, Family Style Theology, For You Radio. I mean, it's all there, man.
So, if you are listening to this on a website, I don't want to discourage you, but you are in a small percentage of people because podcasts are generally harder to listen to on websites.
Well, they're mobile activities is what I would say.
You know, they're sort of the new era of radio, and radio has always been most popular in the car.
On your morning walk or whatever.
And so, again, if you still have trouble doing that, I am... as much as I don't like doing tech support, I will help you out if you send an email to our contact page of, hey, I'd really like this on my phone, and I just can't figure out how to do it.
How about rating it? Should people rate the show?
Yeah, so once you're in that application, this is a little more complex, but you can give the show a rating. There's usually a highlighted purple or blue button that says rate this show. If you click that, it'll give you a pop-up screen and walk you through the instructions on how to review it. 5 stars, please. That really helps us become more searchable.
Anyone ever bought a car when the car salesman tells you, like, you're going to get a survey, and unless you answer 5 on everything, I'm going to get fired?
I was that car salesman.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, hey, thank you for listening to this show. We hope you enjoyed it, and we'll catch you next time. Bye.